you for joining in once again and listening to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm chef and host Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host Aaron Howlett. Join us again as we go on another culinary adventure of the Comox Valley and beyond.
Thanks for joining us again. You're listening to episode 154, Heavenly Libations.
Been looking forward to this one. I think we went for a few episodes there where we were just getting used to the new digs and not really focusing on who was coming in. And now we've been able to sit down and focus on talk to all the people that we want to talk to. So we've got a great slate of shows coming up.
A whole bunch of people that we're lining up, and we've been doing a little bit too much with farms. And I'm not saying a little bit too much farms. Yeah. We've done last couple episodes have been on.
It seems pretty farm heavy the last 20 or so episodes.
Yeah. So I thought we'd bring in a producer and think about having a drink, I think, is what we want to get talking with.
All right. So we've got Jessica McPherson.
Hello.
And you have a business where you're doing shrubs.
Yep.
Although I know what a shrub is, and I know John knows what a shrub is, I don't know if a lot of the listeners know what a shrub is.
Well, we should get your company's name first.
So my company is called Heavenly Libations.
Okay.
And a shrub is essentially, to use a fancy word, an acidulated beverage. So it's vinegar, fruit, and sugar, essentially. Mine are kind of heavy on the fruit and light on the vinegar, but there's a whole array of things you can drink that are similar. So there's drinking vinegars, which is mostly vinegar.
Right.
There's shrubs that are more fruit. It's cordials, which is like a cooked version.
Right.
Sometimes have vinegar, sometimes don't.
I know very little about shrubs other than the fact that I know that their popularity is on the rise. I think probably 4 years ago, we had a cocktail party here in this very house.
That's correct.
And I was wanting to... I used to be a bartender. I used to own a bar. I wanted to bring something different. And so I was sort of trying to get caught up in that few years I hadn't been a bartender. And this one I came upon this one. It was called a Falernum shrub. And I was like, oh, I'm going to make that. Like, I'm going to see what happens there. That seems involved and intricate. And I'm good with in the kitchen. So I can do that. And I made this Falernum shrub, and we made, I can't even remember the name of the cocktail, but there was a specific cocktail we made with it where we added rum and a few other things. But the shrub itself was vinegar, lime, cloves, orange peel. There was a few other spices and aromatics in there and vinegar, and I let it sit in the fridge for a month before. And it was fantastic. I loved the depth of flavor. I loved how interesting it was. I never thought I'd love to drink vinegar.
Mm-hmm. Most people feel that way. And when I say what shrubs are, they're like, oh, vinegar, I don't want to drink that.
Yeah. But
then they try it and they're like, oh, that's actually really good and really refreshing.
It is.
Yeah.
It's that acid that's in the background. Is that kind of what
it's appeals? Like a little bit of a kick right at the end in your palate that just makes kind of wakes your taste buds up.
Yeah. They're fantastic. Yeah. And I've had a few now since. But what led you to wanting to make them?
So, well, I mean, I've always loved making stuff in the kitchen. Like I was the kid that hung around my mom, who was an amazing cook, because I was always hungry. So I ended up learning to cook from her. And I guess about 3 years ago, I tried making my own apple cider vinegar.
Oh, yeah.
Because my parents have 3 apple trees that are just like 1,000 pounds of apples every year. Just
my
crazy.
Goodness.
So, yeah. That's the worst, isn't it?
We had so much apple juice and just so much apple everything. And I thought, well, you know, I've been using apple cider to cook with. I thought, well, maybe I could make it. So I shoved a bunch of apples in a jar and put some water in and left them in the basement for months. And it was the best stuff ever. Like a rank hit. It was, the recipe I had didn't say how much apple per water kind of ratio.
Right.
So I literally just shoved the jar full of cut up apples, and it was like tangy apple juice. It was, and then that kind of led me down this rabbit hole of the internet and weird things I can make in jars. I played around with making real ginger beer, which is with a ginger bug.
Yeah.
Was it a elderberry soda, or elderflower soda?
Oh, yeah.
Which was really great, except it exploded in my fridge. Yeah. No. And then I stumbled upon shrubs and I was like, okay, I have all this fruit, you know, I have lots of people in the valley that give me fruit because I cook, and I tried making them, and I was like, the first one I made was a blood orange,
right?
Winter time.
Oh yeah.
And I bought like 6 oranges and I made it and I drank some, and I, like, the same day I went to the store and I bought like a box of blood oranges. Oh, wow. I'm like, I need to make more of this. It was so good.
I can imagine that those, just like imagining what those flavors would be like together.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just such a rich color and the flavor, and it kind of went from there. It was like every type of fruit I could find, I'm going to make a shrub out of that.
Interesting.
Like, I had like, my husband has like a beer fridge.
Yeah.
Because we do you brew beer.
So he had a beer fridge.
He had a beer fridge and it was totally full of shrubs and there was no room for beer. At the time I was home with my daughter. She was about almost 3. I thought, you know, I want to go back to work, but I don't want to work for someone else. You know, having a schedule on someone else's time just didn't work.
Right.
And I thought, well, why don't I make these and sell them? No one is doing it. You know, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, there's no one on Vancouver Island selling them commercially. So there's 2 places in Vancouver that do it. There's not a lot in Canada.
Interesting.
So it's mainly in the States.
Not that I want to go too far off topic, but having started a few businesses myself, I'm just curious, was there much resistance from, say, the health authority? Because were they familiar enough with what was going on?
They had no idea what they were at all.
Right. Exactly. That's what I was faced the first time I went to them. It was like, I want to be authorized to do this. And like, we don't even know what that is.
Yeah. And once I explained to them and, you know, it's essentially fruit, sugar, and vinegar. So it's not a high-risk food.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So right there, that makes it easier. I'm not
as soon as you say
your meat or eggs.
Yeah.
As soon as you say vinegar, they start going, oh, okay.
Yeah. So their main thing was, okay, does it need to be refrigerated? Does it not need to be refrigerated? And with mine, again, I'm different in that I don't pasteurize them or cook them. Mm-hmm. They're raw. So for that reason, they do need to be in the fridge.
So they do have a shelf life of fairly quick.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of a bit of a weird thing. They just kind of ask you, what do you think the shelf life is? And you tell them and they go, okay.
Wow.
So I said 6 months.
One of those ones where you make up your own rules, and so long as you're sticking by your own rules, they're okay.
It's a little bit surprising when they said that to me, but
yeah,
I've 6 months, but honestly, I have ones I've made at home and they're good past a year. The worst thing that would happen is they would ferment,
right?
You know, so because the vinegar would preserve them, but you would also use a bit more vinegar. Like I go on the lesser side of the vinegar because they're raw. Traditionally, when they were made 17th century, they would add a lot of vinegar, and then they didn't have refrigeration.
Right. So it's a way of preserving just to keep your, these nice flavors throughout the year. So.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point. You said, you know, in the 1700s, well, how long have shrubs been around?
So that's,
I mean,
kind of debatable.
Yeah.
Around 16th, 17th century, so sort of colonial times in the States, people were making them then.
Interesting.
As a way to preserve fruit. But also back in Europe, especially in England, they were also making them. But they tended to use spirits, so like rum, usually rum or like brandy or vodka or whatever. So they both kind of, I don't know if one copied the other or if they evolved separately.
Right.
But the main difference was in Americas, it was more vinegar, and Europe, it was more booze. But essentially they were doing the same thing. They were adding the fruit and sugar.
Right.
And making a tasty thing.
Wonderful.
But also, I mean, if you go way back, you know, there's like the Romans drank Posca, which is essentially a wine that went bad, turned to vinegar, and they would add that to water, and that would prevent scurvy, especially if they are, you know, sailing around. And then it also was a way to make the water safer because the water was probably pretty gross back then.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and you can go back to the Persians. They had a drink called, I might be pronouncing it wrong, Sekanjabin, which is supposed to be like the oldest vinegar drink out there. And it's essentially vinegar, honey, and sometimes like some mint
or cucumber.
Nice. Huh.
So, and then the Arabs had what they call sharab, which is like kind of like a cordial because they didn't drink alcohol.
Right.
So there's all these different places that people go, well, we think shrubs kind of came from this, but I don't know if there's like one specific thing.
So I think I'm taking this more from America, sort of where it's got its grounds in North America from early settlers.
Yeah, or Europe. I mean,
Europe,
it's kind of evolved around the same time.
Okay,
interesting. But so they've been around for a while. That's not a new.
Yeah, no, it's not a new thing. Like a lot of people ask me, "Oh, did you just come up with that name?" I'm like, "No, I didn't create this. It's actually a very old-fashioned thing."
Yeah,
it kind of went out of popularity when refrigeration came along.
Interesting.
And then when pop came along as well, because it was, people would add carbonated water to shrubs,
right?
Which is what we do now, but. When pop came along, it was like already made and more sugary. And
Right.
It kind of took over.
Interesting. Yeah. So skipping back to, say, more modern and current, how long have you been, you said you made the decision to start selling them. How long has that been now, selling
them? So officially I started my business last June.
Okay. How's it been?
It's actually been surprisingly good.
Oh, good.
I'm a little bit overwhelmed with how well it's done. Everyone says you start your own business, it takes a couple years to kind of get your feet off the ground. And I've had huge feedback. And
oh, wow.
I'm at the point where I'm actually going to be getting my own commercial kitchen because I'm outgrowing where I'm renting and I'm storing my stuff at home. And I've got the maximum amount of fridges that I can plug into our house.
Yeah,
safely.
I think actually that's where I first became aware of what you were doing was I think we share the same rental space. I think we both rent from the same place. And
Muster Lady?
Yeah, from Nancy.
Okay, yeah.
And
she's lovely.
Yes.
She's a wonderful
woman. And she had mentioned you and I was like, what's this? I need to know more. Interesting.
She's been so helpful with starting my business. She's just an open book. Any questions I have about running a business, she's just there.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. That's great. So do you, generally we do ask people now that you're established, where do you see growth? Where do you see growth going? Where do you see?
I came up with the name Heavenly Libations because I didn't want to do something that was just shrubs.
Right.
I wanted to have the possibility of doing more.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously once I have my own kitchen, my own space, I can do more. I would like to get into possibly doing some other drink stuff, do a non-exploding elderflower soda because it was really good. But
yeah,
just controlling that carbonation and
I was using champagne yeast and apparently that's pretty
volatile
stuff. but getting a carbonation thing in my space and maybe doing some, getting the ginger bug going. Doing proper, real probiotic ginger beer would be cool. I don't think anyone does that.
Right.
Maybe some herbal sort of things.
Interesting.
I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
I thought about going into bitters, but it seems like there's a lot of people doing
bitters
already.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's really that much of a market for it.
Right.
But things in jars, right? Whatever I can ferment or create, it's just fun. I like
that's it. Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Is there any health benefits in shrubs or is it?
That's a tricky
more of
thing.
Just having healthy ingredients.
Well, the health authority said, be careful with what you say about that because if you do promote that there's health benefits, then it's a whole different set of guidelines.
Right.
So there's none.
So on the label.
Just in case they're listening to this podcast. Right.
But I'm allowed to say, obviously it's raw. So I use, for my vinegars, I usually use either apple cider or white wine. So don't know if there's any health benefits to white wine, but apple cider vinegar, as we all know, has lots of benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And then just all the fruit in there, there's essentially about a pound of fruit in each bottle.
Wow.
Like a 355 mil size bottle. So it's very heavy on the fruit and it's not cooked. It's raw. So it's I like to think you're getting some nutrition from that. It's, a more natural source of sugar.
Right. In the very least, even if it's maybe not a proven health benefit as an alternative to what you might be drinking other than that, this is definitely a better option.
So, anything is a better alternative to pop,
right.
In my opinion.
Pop's
terrible. A lot of people go, I have a soda stream.
Right.
I could use it with that. And I say, yes, that's great. Because if you look at those little pods that the flavor things they come with, you know, it's like a list of like 40 things that you can't even pronounce. Like,
yeah.
That's terrible, that's not, for you.
No.
Just a little sweetener.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Chemical sweeteners.
Yeah. It's chemicals and sugar. So, yeah. You know, if you use shrubs instead of that, you know, that's way better for you right there.
Right.
And it's a concentrate. So you can add, you know, like we suggest like about an ounce for like a full glass, but you know, you can add less. You can just, some people, I have some friends that buy it and they just add a little bit just to flavor their water.
Right.
Because they don't like drinking water.
Yeah.
So you can do whatever you want with it.
I was going to say too, that I've noticed definitely in the last, I've been really lucky this last year. I've been to Vancouver and Victoria a lot to go out for dinner and what have you, just things worked out this year. And I've noticed absolutely they're starting to dominate drink menus.
Like, yes. Yeah. Especially in Vancouver, they're really popular.
Absolutely. They're very versatile as far as, like alcoholic beverages and mixed cocktails and what have you.
Well, yeah. I was kind of interesting, just maybe going into some ways of actually having it. Like we've talked about doing with a little soda water and just so a little
soda
bit.
Soda water is like a good place to start.
Right.
And if you don't like carbonation, you could do regular water.
And I kind of like that. I honestly find myself with like even just orange juice or something like that, I'm finding myself watering it down a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I find it's super concentrated.
Juice is very sweet.
Yes. And it's got, and you can stretch out a liter of orange juice and still get some of the benefits of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So, yeah, we suggest like start out with soda water or water. So an ounce of shrub, fill it with soda water. You'd add an ounce of, you know, any sort of hard liquor, you know, like gin. I really like it with gin because gin and juice is just.
Yeah.
I think they've written songs about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, certain ones are good with vodka, tequila, rum. A lot of the spiced ones go really nice with like a spiced rum.
You got me hooked right here.
Yeah. So that's a good place to start. And then, you know, there's a lot, you can take a lot of like the traditional cocktails and, you know, look at like the flavors of liqueurs are using, go, okay, they want an orange liqueur. I have an orange shrub.
Right.
We try that instead.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and if it's a cocktail that's got like five different things, you know, you wouldn't necessarily use an ounce of shrub. You maybe use a quarter ounce.
Right.
Right.
You can pretty much anything you can come up with. Like
just play with those flavors.
Endless. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I attended a cocktail dinner pairing, which was quite interesting. And the premise was, as they took the food and they said, what wine would you naturally pair with that?
Right.
And so they paired the wines, and then the mixologist, he looked at that and took the characteristics of that wine and then made his cocktails out of that to pair.
Oh, wow.
With the food.
So that's a lot harder to pair. Like wine is kind of easy to pair with the food, but cocktails, they're a lot more complicated.
Well, and they're stronger flavors that are overpowering in a lot of aspects. Mm-hmm. So I just thought with the shrubs, that would be kind of an interesting way with doing a shrub dinner pairing that you could have.
Let's do it.
These nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we're going to have to do Edible Valley cocktail night too.
Yeah. We haven't done one for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they are like you said, they're really have a strong. They have a really deep flavor. You know?
They do.
They're, it's not just like this is orange. Like they're
no.
Like
yeah.
When I make any of the sort of citrus ones, what I do is I actually take the peel and I grind that into the sugar, and so all the oils from the citrus come out too.
Right.
So like especially any sort of shrub that has citrus in it, it's got like multiple depths of flavor because you don't just have the juice.
Right.
You've got the oils, you know, and then you know. And they use a lot of teas and a lot of different flavors.
Yeah, too. I think they just, from what I've tasted, like just there's a complexity and a depth of flavor that develops in the process. Yeah. So you're not just bringing, like when you said, you know, substitute the orange, you're not just bringing in the orange flavor. You're getting a whole wealth of other flavors and complexity coming into it, which is great.
And I can't just make like a shrub and be like, okay, it's just raspberry. Like I have to make it complicated. So like I made one of my favorite ones. It's, I use Cara oranges, which are those kind of pinky oranges. Yeah. And I used a honey bush tea, which had like allspice and cloves and cinnamon and orange peel.
Oh yeah.
And it's almost like drinking like a spiced marmalade. It has so many different flavors in there. And you know, like the same thing, I used the peel from the oranges. So you have that sort of zesty flavor. And then the Cara is almost like has like notes of like berries. Low acid orange is quite different.
I love you say this because I did a cooking class for the young cooks mm-hmm. yesterday, and I actually took the peeled off some zest to give the kids to try it. Because I'm
right.
If you guys are baking or you want to mm-hmm. really get that intense flavor, it's in that zest. Like that's where that it's the oil. And one of the girls like, oh, my dad lights it on fire. Like, you can squeeze it. Yeah. You can put a match to it. And I'm like, that's the oil in there. And it was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
They were impressed. They were
like, and it's a nice way to use the whole fruit too, right?
Yeah. Like a lot of times, you're just throwing that away.
Mm-hmm. Right now I'm making a lot of ginger lemongrass. It's sort of like a big winter flavor. And so I'm grinding up all the lemongrass, but then like the outside and the ends that I'm cutting off, I put those all in a big pot and I boil them for like 2 hours.
Right.
And then let it sit overnight. And then that makes like a really nice lemongrass tea. And I add that as well. So it's like
interesting.
I'm using everything.
Why not, right?
As much as I can.
Well, we always talk about that when we're doing cooking in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I think we brought up a couple of times, like those ends of the carrots and all that. Throw it in a stock pot.
Yeah.
And just make a nice veggie stock.
Yeah.
Because there's tons of flavor in that.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm buying like 38 stalks of lemongrass at a time. I'm going to use the whole thing as much as I can. And it's not an easy thing to get the flavor out of.
Right.
Yeah. There's a bit of work to get that out
of it. For sure, yeah.
It's
laborious. So. Well,
yeah, it's the time, I
think. I think that's, honestly, like we used to do a lemongrass vodka, and I think that was pretty much the only way to draw all that flavor out is to boil the lemongrass, chop it up, boil for a long time, and keep muddling it. Just keep mashing it as much as you can. Yep. But yeah, it is hard to extract the lemongrass flavor.
And it's a different flavor if you boil it than if you use it raw, too.
Right.
Like I do both, and I find that it's very like I'll taste it when it's just got the ground up ginger and lemongrass and the sugar, and then I'll taste it after I've added the tea, and it changes the flavor.
Interesting,
it's quite different.
So where, and now that you've got us all salivating for shrubs, where can people find them?
So right now I have them at Edible Island in Courtney and Seeds Market in Cumberland.
Oh wow!
And I found out just last week that I got into the farmer's market.
Nice.
So
when are you going to start showing up at the farmer's market?
When it stops raining.
Oh yeah. Right now it's outside as of this week.
Yeah. So, as of last. Last week was the last one.
April 14th.
I thought about doing that, but I had another market I was in. So.
Oh yeah.
So I might wait a couple weeks before I go outside.
Yeah.
Nice. No, we didn't actually talk about the flavors you have.
Yeah.
I think we've sort of glanced on them, but is there like a stock amount of flavors that you have, or do you switch it up quite often?
So last year I kind of went crazy. I was just in experimental mode and seeing what people liked, and I made 17 different flavors.
Wow.
Kind of went a little nuts.
That's why those fridges are full.
Yeah. So, and those are all mostly gone now, but I kind of went with the, like, everything's very seasonal. Short, you know, small batches, limited time kind of thing.
Right.
Because I don't use any frozen. I only use fresh fruit. It's what's available when it's fresh. So
I always like that model.
I do too.
What's fresh? What's in season?
It tastes better. And honestly, I tried making shrubs with frozen fruit and it just tasted like a smoothie with vinegar in it. It wasn't my process. I you know, crush or cut up the fruit and I add the sugar and I let it sit for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And that draws the flavor out, draws the juices. And that's different than if you say, take the fruit and stick it in a blender and then put it through a sieve. It's a totally different texture. It's a different flavor.
Of course, yeah.
So I kind of like the way of doing it.
Yeah.
So this year I'm going to do less flavors. I kind of figured out which ones are really, really popular. I do a lot more of those.
Mm-hmm.
I might do like a few new flavors, just small batches. I'll just do it at the market or something.
Just experiments.
So what are your popular flavors?
So,
then?
So last year, probably my popularest flavors were Blueberry Earl Grey.
Oh, wow.
That was probably my most popular.
That's crazy. I just,
really good.
I made a jam last year and we just opened it this morning. It's Blueberry Earl Grey jam.
Yeah. It's a really good combination.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And the peach cardamom vanilla was really popular. And the rhubarb ginger was probably the three top from last year.
Yeah.
And so far this year, pineapple turmeric has been really popular. It's very yellow.
Yeah. Well, turmeric's pretty much on the rise. Not that it was ever a big secret, but it seems to be like ubiquitous right now. You can find it in any grocery store, it's whereas really you couldn't popular. Before.
Yeah. So and there's something about like I use raw turmeric. So it's like kind of musky and a little bit stinky. And then the pineapple is like really acidic.
Yeah.
And you put the two together and the pineapple just like breaks down the turmeric to this like golden honey sort of flavor. Like it's a really good combination.
Yeah. And know that I'll be trying some of these out now.
Yeah. So that, that's probably my most popular this year. And so I'm going to try and pare down a bit.
I can understand that.
I've done a few, more savory flavors. People either really love them or really don't. Like I did a celery, thyme, juniper one.
Oh, wow.
That some people just love and other people
just
were like, this is disgusting.
Oh, no. Celery is a funny one. People either love it or they hate it. I know people that just, even just anything, celery is like, no.
It's kind of one of those shrubs, you don't want to just drink it with soda water unless you really love celery. But if you put it in like a Caesar.
I was just going to say, the first thing I think is a Caesar.
Yeah. And I don't personally like Caesars, but I have friends that do. And they've said, wow, this is really good in a Caesar.
Especially if you're the kind of person that likes, say, some people like a celery stick in their Caesar, but some people like a pickled bean. Yeah. If you're the kind of person that likes a pickled bean in your Caesar, you're going to probably like a shrub, like a celery shrub in your Caesar.
Yeah. It gives it a little bit of something else.
Yeah.
And then this winter I tried one, it was blood orange, beet and saffron.
Oh, wow.
And I went fairly light on the beet. It was more like I wanted the color. That one's sort of a little bit more popular than the celery, but I like the idea of doing more savory ones, but it doesn't seem they're a great seller. So
interesting. I'll
probably keep those on the down low for now.
Right. But, yeah. I wonder if you could maybe pair up with a chef or sorry, I'm giving John a very sideways glance. I'm paired with a chef to figure out ways to develop those savory flavors. Not necessarily in that process, but once you have that, then turning it into an ingredient in a dish.
How to use it. Yeah. Because I think there definitely is, I think there's a value to them. It's just not, they're not as accessible as like a fruit drink. People are like, oh, I want to drink a vegetable, but fruit, that's no problem.
I'm kind of at this point picturing it as a cocktail thing because I think cocktails are on the rise.
Yeah,
they are. And savory cocktails are on the rise too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
People want, they want to drink a cocktail, but they want to pretend at least that it's healthy. Yeah.
Well, they don't want to have, I mean, it's trying to find a cocktail that's not all fruity and all.
And that's something that's funny. Yeah. When people talk about a cocktail, they're like, oh, I don't want anything strong or fruity. And you're left with, well, what else can I, like what broad categories are there? But I've got to say, like even in the last 10 years, cocktails have definitely started to lean towards vegetables. Vegetables are now becoming a very big, I mean, there's a subtlety and flavor there that you don't have to face with like a fruity one. So maybe that's where they
are. Just how you mix it.
Yeah.
So picturing this martini glass with like a little foam and like the beets.
Like a dirty martini. Yeah. Totally work with a savory one. I thought that with my, with the celery one and I tried it and it was not
interesting.
Too bad. Yeah.
Well, maybe we can put a call out there to a call to action to all of our listeners that maybe you have some ideas of what we can be doing with these or other interesting things you can add them to.
Yeah. I use them means for we'd love salad to hear dressings it. Too. Like base instead of adding like a balsamic vinegar.
Yeah.
You just add, you know, like a bit of oil and a bit of mustard or something. And
I think you just opened up a whole new category there.
Yeah. So that's lots of flavor in that
Well, and that's why I made them as a concentrate rather than mixing them.
Yeah.
Like, there's that company that's out of Portland, I think called Pock Pock. I think they're like pretty well known for shrubs. So they sell them already mixed with soda water.
Right.
I thought about doing that, but it makes bottling a bit more challenging. And then also then you can't do anything else with it. It's already mixed. Whereas if it's, I'm selling it as a concentrate, you know, you got 12 servings in a bottle. You can make cocktails. You can do salad dressings. You can do whatever you want with it.
Wonderful.
Wow.
I did have a question we never talked on. Where do you get most of your products or your produce from for it? So your berries and is it a mixed bunch or is
it's the first year it kind of varied. I tried to do, originally I wanted to do all local. And then I kind of came across the barrier of there's lots of fruit in the valley, but most of the fruit producers don't want to sell like 100 pounds of fruit just to one person. You know, they want to put it in little packages and go to the farmer's market and sell them that way.
Right. Sort of optimizing their dollar or.
Yeah. So, and you know, like I said, there's like about a pound of fruit in each bottle. So like an average, like with the kitchen I'm using now, like I make about 40 bottle batches. So right. That's like 40 pounds of fruit I need mm-hmm. a week to make a batch. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of people that want to sell me that much fruit.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Right. Yeah.
So like I found an awesome lady for rhubarb. You know, she's got like 30 plants. She's like, I will sell you all my rhubarb if you want it.
Oh, wow. That's great.
So I'm good for rhubarb, but you know, like I make a really awesome strawberry shrub, but trying to find already picked strawberries for a price that's reasonable is really tough.
Of course.
Right.
You know, so.
And I mean, definitely around this area, strawberries don't have a huge life. Like once you pick them,
yeah,
you've got to process them.
This isn't California where they've got, you know, an entire industry built around it. A lot
of the fruit I find in the summer, it's like that. It's like, okay, I've got to like juggle like when I can get in the kitchen and when I can get the fruit, and I don't want it sitting around.
Right.
Because it's going to go bad. Like raspberries too, like they go off in a heartbeat. So it's kind of, the summer is kind of crazy that way. I did get a fair bit of stuff from the Okanagan last year just because they were better prices and I could get the quantity. My husband used to work up there a lot in the summer, so he would fill his truck up with fruit and he'd call me on the cell phone like, I'm at a fruit stand. They have this. What do you want?
Nice. Take it all, right?
It was like, what do you mean you can't get 12 pallets of blueberries in your truck? So it was a little bit tricky, but I'm hoping the more popular, the more well-known I get, the more maybe some more fruit producers will see what I'm doing and go, hey, no, I'd love to supply you.
Sure.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully maybe some are listening now and have the ability.
Hey, I got a ton of berries that we could send your way.
Just no apples. I'm set for apples.
Set for apples.
And rhubarb.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I had a lovely lady who donated like 100 pounds of quince to me.
Oh, nice.
Because most people don't even know what it is or what to do with it. She's like, just take them. And so that was like my one flavor that wasn't raw because you can't use it.
You can't, no. And that one, would that come out a little marmalade-y? Would that come out a little?
Well, what I did, I actually boiled the quinces in white balsamic vinegar.
Oh, wow.
And sugar. And then I added rose water. And it was my favorite one. It was really good.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But it was really labor intensive. You know, I borrowed like a million Dutch ovens from like everyone I knew and like gassed out everyone in the kitchen because it's boiling vinegar.
But, pretty intense.
Yeah. But it was awesome that she
I scored some from Lush Valley this year.
Oh, nice.
They actually called me
James
like 2 days later and said, do you want some quince? And I was like, I actually just got given 100 pounds.
Yeah. But and they were like, you know, can you just come grab it and take as much as you want? And I was like, some for home, some for.
Nice.
And the best thing after making the quince shrub is I still had all the, like the fruit minus the juice. So I boiled it up and made that quince paste.
I get stumped on this one all the time.
Yeah.
I'll Google it later.
I know it goes I know it goes with Machengo cheese.
But it starts with an M.
Yes. Yeah. I have like.
That's what we did with
it. I have a giant amount of that in my freezer. Could throw that out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe a side business at some point.
Something at the market.
Yeah.
So I guess we should.
We should probably wrap this up. We could probably keep going.
You want me to say the flavors I have right now?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Tell us what you want everyone to hear.
I have three flavors that I do year round, which is the lemon lime, the pineapple turmeric, and the ginger lemongrass. So I'll have those year round for anyone who's interested. And then the other ones I still have available. I still have some celery thyme juniper, some mango coconut, the caracara honey bush, the blood orange beet saffron, and the sangrita. Mm-hmm. Not sangria, it's sangrita. Rita. Based on the traditional Mexican drink of pomegranate, sour orange, and chilies.
Interesting.
And then I added vinegar and sugar because I thought that was kind of a cool combination.
Sounds good, yeah.
Yeah. So those are ones I have right now.
And they can expect to see those at the market when it's maybe nicer weather.
When it's a little bit warmer.
A little drier. Warmer.
Maybe the end of April, hopefully.
And so if people are looking for those products, you were saying that Edible Island has them.
Yeah, Edible Island and Seeds. And if there's ever a flavor someone really just wants and that's not at either stores, and you know, mm-hmm. I'm not at the market, they can always contact me on my website. And
what's the best way to get your website?
Well, the website is heavenlylibations.com.
Okay.
So that's easy. Or my Facebook page, mm-hmm. Facebook and Instagram is Drink This Stuff.
Drink This Stuff. Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah. And so there's a link on my website mm-hmm. to email me on there.
Okay.
And yeah, I can always, I'm not allowed to sell. I don't have a store. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you desperately need a flavor, you know, I can come meet you somewhere. Right. My trench coat. Here's your shrub.
Excellent. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for sitting down with us today.
Yeah.
I think I've learned quite a bit today.
Absolutely. Myself,
so.
Absolutely. I'm all inspired now. I'm like, I got the wheels turning. I'm thinking about things here.
Yeah. Well, if anyone has any, well, I guess we were asking if anyone has any other questions, they can always email us at theedibleValley@gmail. Mm-hmm. Oh, you have your cookbook or your book here about
old-fashioned shrubs. To mention, if you're interested in making your own shrubs, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't want to buy them from me, there's pretty
much... Even though they're probably better for you, right?
the book to get, it's by Michael Deitch.
I would probably say it, pronounce that Deitch.
Deitch, yeah. Okay. It's called Shrubs, an Old-Fashioned Drink from Modern Times, and it's pretty much the only book out there mm-hmm. that I know of on how to make shrubs. And it's really cool. It's got like the old-fashioned recipes that were made with booze, as well as like most fruits you can think of. And he's really good. He doesn't say you have to follow this recipe. It's like, here's a starting point. Here's the things you want to watch out for. Here's things you could possibly do. Go mm-hmm. to town. Like,
and if you want to learn more, you can take a look at the book, or you can contact Jessica, or you can contact us.
If we haven't covered something here that, you know, please get in touch with us. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us in a lot of places.
We always love to hear feedback from our listeners, and especially from you, just for you to give us a little 2 cents of how you feel about the podcast, what you'd like to see.
Maybe something we missed that we didn't cover that you want more details on.
Yeah, because I would like just to say, if there's anyone out there mm-hmm. that is doing this currently or is mm-hmm. about to get into this or knows someone who's doing one of these few things, mm-hmm. we would love to talk to you. So I'm looking for anyone who's in a restaurant, who's opening up a new restaurant and getting going.
Yeah.
New caterers out there. I know people always get into catering.
Yeah.
It always moves on to something else, but it's really nice to meet up with these people and find out what they're offering and what they can give to people. New producers, which is always great because there's been so many wonderful people that we've run into in this time that have grown their businesses, and it's really neat to see them start off from just really small things and how they progress. Mm-hmm. And we'd like to know their story of how they got into it. And don't forget farmers.
Yeah.
Nothing better than knowing the people that are working with the lands, or even in our case, in the water. Yeah. Those farmers out there, we'd love to talk to you. And of course, we're always into new events. There's so much happening in this community with that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff that we never get a chance to talk about. And then, of course, if you're a food group or a foodie just in general, we'd love to talk to you and find out what some of your favorite foods are.
Yeah, even if you do, like, you know, those sort of foodie dinner groups. We would love to talk to you, like, want to know about your dinner groups and get some ideas, get some talking going about what's going on out there in the smaller venues, not just the big venues.
And of course we're putting up some recipes, some audio recipes for people to follow along. So if you're interested in any of that, we've got that all here at the Edible Valley Podcast.
Thanks to everybody that's helped us get here so far, all of our sponsors. As you know, with us stepping out and taking this in that new, more liberating direction, we are looking for new sponsors. We're a new sort of show with a new direction. So it's time to start anew. And we would love to get out there and talk to you or discuss anything further if you want to be a part of the show.
If you could just send us an email at theedibleValley@gmail.com. You can get us at Twitter at Edible Valley, Facebook at the Edible Valley Podcast. And once again, remember, keep it fresh, keep it flavorful, and keep it fun. Thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.